Chapter 5. People slipped and slid through the darkness about them, holding lamps and torches, flashlights and candles. It made Richard think of documentary films he'd seen of schools of fish glittering and darting through the ocean. Deep water, inhabited by things that had lost the use of their eyes. Richard followed the leather woman up some steps. Stone steps, aged with metal. They were in an underground station. They joined a line of people waiting to slip through a grille, which had been opened a foot or so to uncover the door, which led out onto the pavement. Immediately in front of them were a couple of young boys, each with a string tied around his wrist. The strings were held by a pallid, bald man who smelled of formaldehyde. Immediately behind them in the line waited a grey-bearded man with a black-and-white kitten sitting on his shoulder. It washed itself intently, licked the man's ear, then curled up on his shoulder and went to sleep. The line moved slowly as, one by one, the figures at the end slipped through the space between the grill and the wall and edged into the night. "Why are you going to the market, Richard Mayhew?" asked the leather woman, in a low voice. "I have friends I'm hoping to meet there. Well, just one friend, actually. I don't actually know many people from this world. I was sort of getting to know anesthesia, but..." He trailed off. Asked the question he had not dared to voice until this moment. "Is she dead?" The woman shrugged. "Yes, or as good as. I trust your visit to the market will make her loss worthwhile." Richard shivered. "I don't think it could," he said. They were approaching the front of the queue. "What do you do?" he asked. She smiled. "I sell personal physical services." "Oh," he said. Then, "what kind of personal physical services?" "I rent my body." She did not elaborate. "Ah." He was too weary to pursue it, to press her to explain just what she meant. He had an idea, though. And then they stepped out into the night. Richard looked back. The sign on the station said, "Knightsbridge." He didn't know whether to smile or to mourn. It felt like the small hours of the morning. Richard looked down at his watch and was not surprised to notice that the digital face was now completely blank. Perhaps the batteries had died, or, he thought, more likely, time in London below had only a passing acquaintance with the kind of time he was used to. He did not care. He unstrapped the watch and dropped it into the nearest waste bin. The odd people were crossing the road in a stream, walking through the double doors facing them. "There," he said, appalled. The woman nodded. "There." The building was large and covered with many thousands of burning lights. Conspicuous coats of arms on the wall facing them proclaimed that it proudly sold all sorts of things by appointment to various members of the British royal family. Richard, who had spent many a footsore weekend hour trailing behind Jessica through every prominent shop in London, recognized it immediately, even without the huge sign proclaiming it to be Harrods. The woman nodded. "Only for tonight," she said. "The next market could be anywhere." "But I mean," said Richard, "Harrods." It seemed almost sacrilegious to be sneaking into this place at night. They walked in through the side door. The room was dark. They passed the bureau de change and the gift wrapping section, through another darkened room selling sunglasses and figurines, and then they stepped into the Egyptian room. Colour and light broke over Richard like a wave hitting the shore. His companion turned to him. She yawned, cat-like, shading the vivid pinkness of her mouth with the back of her caramel hand. And then she smiled and said, "Well, you're here, safe and more or less sound. I have business to attend to. Fare you well. She nodded curtly and slipped away into the crowd. Richard stood there, alone in the throng, drinking it in. It was pure madness. Of that there was no doubt at all. It was loud and brash and insane, and it was, in many ways, quite wonderful. People argued, haggled, shouted, sang. They hawked and touted their wares and loudly declaimed the superiority of their merchandise. Music was playing, a dozen different kinds of music being played a dozen different ways on a score of different instruments, most of them improvised, improved, improbable. Richard could smell food. All kinds of food. The smells of curries and spices seemed to predominate, with beneath them the smells of grilling meats and mushrooms. Stalls had been set up all through the shop, next to or even on counters that, during the day, had sold perfume or watches or amber or silk scarves. Everybody was buying. Everybody was selling. Richard listened to the market cries as he began to wander through the crowds. Lovely fresh dreams, first-class nightmares, we got 'em, get your lovely nightmares here. Weapons, arm yourself, defend your cellar, cave or hole. You want to hit 'em, we got 'em, come on, darling, come on over here. Rubbish, screamed a fat, elderly woman in Richard's ear as he passed her malodorous stall. Junk, she continued, garbage, trash. Awful, debris, come and get it, nothing whole or undamaged, crap, tripe and useless piles of shit, you know you want it. A man in armour beat a small drum and chanted as he did so. Lost property, roll up and see for yourself. Lost property, none of your found muck here, everything guaranteed properly lost. Richard wandered through the huge rooms of the store, like a man in a trance. He was unable even to guess how many people there were at the night market. 1,000? 2,000? 5,000? One stall was piled high with bottles, full bottles and empty bottles of every shape and every size, from bottles of booze to one huge glimmering bottle that could have contained nothing but a captive gin. Another sold lamps and candles made of many kinds of wax and tallow. A man thrust what appeared to be a child's severed hand, clutching a candle towards him as he passed, muttering, "And of glory, sir? Send him up the wooden hill to Bedfordshire, guaranteed to work." Richard hurried past, not wishing to find out what a hand of glory was, nor how it worked. He passed a stall selling glittering gold and silver jewellery, another selling jewellery made from what looked like the valves and wires of antique radios. There were stalls that sold every manner of book and magazine, others that sold clothes, old clothes patched and mended and made strange. Several tattooists, something that he was almost certain was a small slave market. He kept well clear of this. A dentist's chair with a foot-operated manual drill with a line of miserable people standing beside it waiting to have their teeth pulled or filled, by a young man who seemed to be having altogether too good a time. A bent old man selling unlikely things that might have been hats and might have been examples of modern art. Something that looked very much like a portable shower facility, even a blacksmith's. And every few stalls, there would be somebody selling food. Some of them had food cooking over open fires, curries and potatoes and chestnuts and huge mushrooms and exotic breads. Richard found himself wondering why the smoke from the fires didn't set off the building's sprinkler system. Then he found himself wondering why no one was looting the store. Why set up their own little stalls? Why not just take things from the shop itself? He knew better at this point than to risk asking anyone. He seemed marked as a man from London above, and thus worthy of great suspicion.